This week's podcast is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Please consider giving a gift to keep this podcast running along with other From the Top programming. Go to fromthetop.org. Don't feel bad that a 14-year-old on today's show plays a violin that's on loan. This one is worth more than your house, your car, and your parents' house combined. This instrument in his talented hands will sing the beautiful music of Mozart. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. We're at Oklahoma City University's Kirkpatrick Auditorium, where we'll also hear an 11-year-old pianist perform Bach and meet a young cellist who lives and breathes Judy Garland. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. Here's our host, one of America's great concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thanks and welcome to the show, everybody. First of all, I want to thank our host and radio partner, KCSC Classical 90.1, for bringing us to the Sooner State and to Oklahoma City for our first visit. And of course, as first-timers to Oklahoma, we come here with those hackneyed images in our heads, cattle drives, oil derricks, ranch hands singing, "Oh, what a beautiful morning." But today's Oklahoma City offers truly so much more: an architecturally significant downtown, the restaurant culture of the Bricktown neighborhood, and strong arts organizations. As a matter of fact, I spent some time yesterday at the fine Oklahoma City Museum of Art with the fine young pianist Joanne mentioned. She happens to love art, and she visits local museums wherever she travels. So we found ourselves talking in front of an amazing painting by the late 19th century Impressionist American artist William Merritt Chase. You'll hear that conversation later on in the program. Still, I've got to say that those old images of Oklahoma aren't completely anachronistic. One of the top livestock markets in the world is here. Oil derricks do dot the Capitol grounds. And as far as singing goes, we've got the fantastic Norman North High School Chorale on today's show. But fittingly, we're going to begin the show in Oklahoma with the call of the trumpet. Please welcome, from Scottsdale, Arizona, 16-year-old Noah Dugan. Noah, what clarion call have you brought us to start things off?
We're going to play the first movement of Burma's Trumpet Concerto.
When you set it center stage, we'll take it from the top.
Thank you.
Viola Dugan playing the opening movement of Oscar Böhm's Trumpet Concerto in F minor. Viola is 16 years old from Scottsdale, Arizona. That was great, Noah. I just love your sound, and what a great way to start off the program. And you know what? To be frank, I want to be you, Noah. I mean, you've got so much great stuff going on. First of all, tell everybody about your recent competition win.
Well, last March, I went up to Fairfax, Virginia to compete in the semifinal and the final rounds of the National Trumpet Competition, and I ended up taking home the first prize in the high school division.
So, Noah, you're a trumpet champion, and not only that, but you're a champion with the ladies. You've got a great girlfriend that you and your parents adore. Tell everybody how you met her.
Well, it was last September, and our youth orchestra was going up to the mountains for a retreat, and they have these structured activities, and most of them are athletic, and not very athletic, frankly, and it was my turn to spike. We were playing volleyball, and there was a girl I liked on the other side of the net, and I actually hit it really, really hard, and if she wouldn't have ducked, she would have been knocked out. And so from that point onward, she actually paid a lot more attention to me. And then
I don't know, that doesn't sound really great, no, I gotta say. You know, so every time you're out on a date, she ducks, you know? She pays more attention to you. Well, love at first spike, I guess. So, and here's another great thing in your life. You go to this arts charter school that you really love. Tell us about that. That's in Scottsdale or in Phoenix or where?
Yeah, it's actually in Tempe, which is right near Phoenix. And it's the enrollment's about 130, and it's just great because it's really opened up so many doors to me because I've never really been exposed to jazz before in my life, and this school happens to have a huge focus on jazz. And not only are there great teachers, they're just great students there, and it's opened up so many doors to me. It's great.
So the New School for the Arts, it's called, and so that's where you found your love of jazz? Mm-hmm. Hope to hear you play some of that sometime soon. I bet that's great. Noah, with all of your musical achievement, no one would guess that you've got some pretty severe bilateral hearing loss. Were you born with this? Was this something that developed?
It's something I was born with, and around age 5, I ended up getting hearing. I got hearing aids, and when I was born, they weren't testing babies for hearing loss, and so it basically started where I don't really know what I'm missing. It's hard to describe, but once I got my hearing aids, the world totally opened up to me, and I was hearing things that I didn't know made sound, the wind, my mother's footsteps, dripping water. It just totally changed my world. Totally changed my world.
They gave you an appreciation for it. It was kind of endearing, though, thinking about you as an infant, and you were, as you describe it, you know, you were reading lips, basically.
Yes.
And so this was just something that you presumed everybody did, or.
Yes. To my parents, when they would talk to me, I would grab their faces and make them look at me, and they just thought it was really sweet and cute.
Yeah. But exactly.
But I was actually reading their lips because I had no idea what they were saying.
My gosh. I wonder if your own struggles with hearing have influenced your career aspirations. Where do you see yourself going from here?
I really want to end up just making someone else with a hearing loss realize that it should not inhibit you in any way, whether you want to be an athlete, a musician. I certainly can say for myself that it's not constrained me in any way at all. I just want someone else with a hearing loss to know, just to not hold back and to go for it.
No, it's just a fantastic time playing with you and being with you, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Noah Dugan, 16 years old, a trumpetist from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Standing on stage with me now is our next performer, a 14-year-old cellist from Louisville, Kentucky. Her name is Anne Richardson, and she's brought quite an aggressive unaccompanied cello piece. Anne, what's a nice girl like you playing such a formidable and forbidding German piece?
Well, I guess you could say that this is the piece I take all of my anger and frustration out on.
Okay. So it's a fantastic piece by Paul Hindemith. Tell everybody the title.
I'll be playing the first and fifth movement of the Solo Cello Sonata by Hindemith.
Richardson, a cellist, 14 years old from Louisville, Kentucky, playing two movements from Paul Hindemith's Sonata for Solo Cello, Lebhaft zur Nacht, and the final movement, Messig Schnee. And we've never had that piece on the show before, and I can only say, you know, that radio is a great thing, but it doesn't communicate the visual disconnect between seeing this wonderfully elegant young lady playing this road rage piece on the cello. The raging red heels, though, do go somewhat of a distance towards making that possible. That's a phenomenal performance, beautifully done. Sometimes, and the best way to know someone is to talk to them about their musical heroes. And you have a huge appreciation for this particular singer.
The night is bitter. The stars have lost their glitter. The winds grow colder. Suddenly you're older. And all because of the man.
Incomparable Judy Garland. You like that particular song pretty well?
Yes, and I just love listening to her in general.
Would you say that's your favorite Judy Garland song?
It's definitely one of them.
One of them. It's from a great, great film. Which one?
Star is Born.
Star is Born, that's absolutely right, with James Mason. And what is it about Judy Garland's singing that moves you?
I definitely love her imperfection, and especially when she was older, after she had gone through so much in her life. She had so much to say, and she spoke every bit of that in her music.
Absolutely true. And you've learned so much about her life. You've read about her. What are some of the things that you found most compelling about her story?
Well, I do know that in her younger years, she was an actress at MGM. And when she first went there, they told her that she looked like a fat monster. And they gave her only chicken broth to eat and put her on pills. And those pills ended up destroying her life. I guess that's
really... Yeah, that's kind of outrageous, really. And you also let me know that her voice wasn't really her own. Somebody sort of remade her voice at MGM. Who was that?
Roger Edens kind of made her voice a little bit what he wanted, mm-hmm. I guess. And so that's why I really love her in the older years, because she's her own person.
She came into her own, and there's that great sense of poignancy to that voice. People often think of her as the cute song and dance girl in those MGM musicals, of course, The Wizard of Oz, but she certainly knew sadness, and she expressed it so poignantly later in her career. Listen to this.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky,
So, Anne, you've known some hard times yourself, really. Would you say, how so?
Well, I've really had a hard time these past years in middle school, as everybody does. And I really don't fit in with any of my peers. And sometimes I just feel so lonely when I'm at school. And that makes it even more important for me to share my music, because I feel that that's almost the only way I can communicate.
It's interesting. So it's sort of anachronistic. I mean, you're listening to, you know, great popular music. I mean, it's not like you don't have that sort of sensibility, but I suppose is classical music part of your sort of distance from your middle school pals?
I'd say that classical music isn't the coolest thing to do in music, right, in middle school.
You're talking about Bach and Brahms and Heinrich Bieber, and they're talking about Justin Bieber. And, you know, it's... you did have a breakthrough of sorts with your peers, and it had to do with this song.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby.
So how did this song come into play?
Well, at the end of eighth grade, every student is required at my school to give a me project, a speech about themselves, and my teachers really wanted me to play my cello, since that's who I am, and so I chose to play Somewhere Over the Rainbow as a duet with one of my cello friends, and these students that I could never, ever relate to were just almost breaking out in tears.
Well, it's a great song, and I'm not surprised you moved them. I'm sure your playing of this song had as serious depth as the Hindemith you just played, and it's great to be able to make that connection through music, I think.
Yes,
good for you.
One of my favorite things with music is to be able to get people to melt a little.
Yeah, absolutely. One of Judy Garland's most famous tunes was I Love a Piano from her movie Easter Parade. As part of your adoration of all things Judy, you've written some new lyrics to that song that are a little bit more appropriate to the center of your life. Would you sing us a little bit?
I love a cello, I love a cello, I love to hear somebody play upon a cello, a mellow cello. The sound just carries me away. So you can keep your P-I-A-N-O, give me a C-E-L-L-O-O-O. I love to play my cello, Garavaglia or Strad.
You're a brave girl singing your own song and playing that Hindemith, you know, just you're such a great advocate for
Thank
all
you.
Things cello, and we wish you all the best. Just
Thank
great
you.
Having you. Thank you, Anne. Anne Richardson, 14 years old from Louisville, Kentucky. Now it's time to hear some of this area's finest young musicians. I would venture to say we're going to hear one of the finest groups of musicians from anywhere in the country. Please welcome the Norman North High School Chorale. Standing next to me is the director of the chorale, Tony Gonzalez. Tony, welcome. How big is this group we have in front of us?
We have 55 here today.
And in the choral program that you direct, how many groups are in that whole thing?
We have a total of 8 choirs.
Wow, fantastic. And so this is obviously the A-team.
Yes,
yeah. It is. Great. You've brought an incredibly beautiful and evocative work by a great American composer best known for his choral writing, Eric Whitaker. Tell everybody the title of the piece and a little bit of that background.
It's Water Night, entitled Water Night. It's a translation of a poem by Octavio Paz, a translation done by Muriel Rukeyser. The Spanish name of the poem was Agua Nocturna. And like you said, it's a beautifully evocative, metaphorical poem set in a series of vignettes and visions about the soul and the connection of the water with the soul and the darkness of the soul, unless we open our eyes and find the most inner spirit in our souls. Beautiful piece.
Well said. We look forward to it.
With my soul.
theater piece Water Night, we heard under the direction of Tony Gonzalez, the Norman North High School Chorale from neighboring Norman, Oklahoma. We've got the co-presidents of the chorale at the mics now, Chris Carbon and Kate Oker. Both of them are 18 years old, and they're both seniors at Norman North High School. That was breathtaking, you guys.
Thank you. It was really just spellbinding.
Thank you so much. Can't say how much we appreciate just the depth and the incredible dedication and unanimity of sound that you guys have. Chris, in your particular case, it's fair to say that singing is part of your life. That would be an understatement, actually.
Yes, absolutely. My life is structured around singing. I sing for 2 hours a day at school, minimum. I take 2 private voice lessons a week, and that's not counting fun in the car. So, yes, it's absolutely what my life revolves around.
And so when you're in school during the day, would you say the choir room is sort of what you look forward to most?
Absolutely. I come in every morning with my cup of coffee, and I can sit on a couch and enjoy some time with my friends before we begin rehearsal. It's something of a home away from home. It's a sanctuary for me.
It's great. Center of the sanctuary, the choir room. We have Mr. G, Tony Gonzalez, the director of the chorale. And you both say he has really changed your lives. Kate, you said you've learned a lot from him, and that's clear. Everybody's learned a lot from him. But you had to overcome yourself to do it. What do you mean by that?
I learned an act of humility from Mr. G. I come from a musical theater background, and I entered Norman North with that. And it's very classical and technical, the training that they do there. And I take private lessons with Mr. G. And for about the first month and a half, it was just this internal and external battle of me thinking, no, I'm right, I sound good. But then after a while, you have to realize that he knows what he's doing, so.
He does. He does.
It was just taking that and then realizing he's correct. And from that, I've learned so much. Technically, it's helped musical theater so much. I can't state how thankful I am for what he's taught me classically.
Chris, what would you say is the most valuable thing that Mr. G has taught you?
I think beyond any musical experience that he's given me, and he's given me a lot, I've learned the meaning of respect from Mr. G. And that's not to say that I've ever been a terribly disrespectful person, but the amount of hard work and diligence and commitment that he gives to each and every one of us as an individual as well as a choir is really remarkable, and he deserves the best, and he demands the best, and he gets the best.
Yeah, he does. Really does. I know that Mr. G is incredibly proud that his training is only a beginning for you two guys. Tell everyone where you're headed off to. Chris, where are you going next year?
I'll be attending the University of Missouri Kansas City Conservatory of Music and majoring in vocal performance.
Great place. And Kate, how about you?
I will be attending Oklahoma City University for a BFA acting and BA music and voice.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck to you both.
Thank you.
Chris Carbon and Kate Oker, both 18 years old and members of the Norman North High School Chorale, directed by Tony Gonzalez.
From the Top is putting together a special episode where all the young performers will be kids of active duty military service members or kids of veterans or of National Guard or Army Reserve members. If you can recommend one of these great young players, let us know at fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. From the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine, online at poetryfoundation.org. And from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the energy of America's kids and the power of classical music. This week, we're coming to you from Oklahoma City University's Kirkpatrick Auditorium in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Coming up, the 14-year-old junior division winner of the 2010 Sphinx Competition for African American and Latino string players performs the music of Mozart. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Today's show is made possible with support from the Kirkpatrick Foundation, Oklahoma City University, the University of Central Oklahoma, the Oklahoman, and the Skirvin Hilton. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Our next young performer is only 11, but what an 11-year-old she is. Please welcome from Henderson, Nevada, Victoria Young. Victoria, welcome. I'm very proud to say that you are one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists. That's great, and congratulations are well deserved. What are you playing for us today?
I'm going to play the Bray Sarabande and the Jig from French Suite No. 5 by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Now, what do you like about the music of Johann Sebastian Bach at your very young age?
I think it's really fun to bring out all the different voices, and every time I play it, I uncover something new.
It's great the way you play it, and we're looking forward to it. The stage is yours.
Thank you.
Victoria Young from Henderson, Nevada, 11 years old, playing Johann Sebastian Bach's French Suite in G. We heard the Bourré, Sarabande, and G. Victoria, I think I'm going to swear off anybody over the age of 18 playing Bach. I mean, between your incredible performance and another friend of ours, Hilda Huang, who you were just at the Rosalind Turek Bach competition with her.
Yeah.
I guess you tied for first place, I guess.
Yes.
Gosh, fantastic. Victoria, other than being a masterful Bach pianist, what's one of your favorite things to do?
I like to visit museums, especially art museums.
Wherever you travel, whenever you travel, I guess you try to go to a museum. That's very much more diligent and dedicated than I am. What's been one of your favorites so far, anywhere that you've traveled?
I like the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. I saw some of my favorite painting there. One of them was The Starry Night by Vincent van Gogh.
Oh, yeah.
And another one was The Sleeping Gypsy by Henri Rousseau.
There was a painting here in Oklahoma City at the Museum of Art that you really wanted to see. Tell everyone what that was.
It was Venice by William Merritt Chase.
That's right. I thought we should go to the museum and check it out. So, Victoria, describe this painting. What are we looking at?
It's just a small corner of Venice, but it shows so much, like the windows, and there's some flowers, and over here there's some shadows, but you can't see who the people are. It kind of makes the painting mysterious because you don't know who the people are, and they're kind of outside the painting.
Mm-hmm. We just see their shadows against the Venetian walls. It looks like somebody's hanging out of a window at this palazzo, probably one of the Grand Canal palazzos, I'm guessing, just from the Moroccan window frames and things like that. When was this painted? Do you know? Let's look and see.
1877.
So, and I guess that William Merritt Chase was a European-educated American painter who was in, I guess, it looks like Impressionism. I guess he would qualify. Tell me more about why you like this painting. I mean, you looked at this painting in the gallery catalog, and what drew you to it?
It's just a small corner of Venice, but it shows so much, like the windows and the person there. Mm-hmm. You can tell like there's depth with the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the shadows there, it really makes it seem like he's painting outside of just this corner.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot, sort of, I mean, there's no reflective surfaces, but as you say, you know, with the depth of the brush strokes, we see a lot of depth and a lot of character, even though we're just looking at one wall and not some sort of panoramic Venetian view. Let's go over and sit on that bench and we can chat some more. So, Victoria, how did you get so interested in visual art? I know you're very close to your mom. Did she introduce you to painting?
When I was little, I liked to draw a lot, and every time I drew, there was like a story behind it. And when I was in Malaysia, I actually had an art teacher, and so I just really fell in love with it.
I know you and your mom have been through some really tough times. Do you mind talking to us a little bit about that? What happened?
Yeah, we had some problems with my dad, so we went to a domestic violence shelter, and it was kind of far away from my school, so it was pretty hard to get to my school and get back. And luckily, my piano teacher let us practice there, so I had a place to practice.
Mm-hmm. Something happened to your piano, though. Tell us about what happened to your own piano.
My mom went to China to study, and our house is going to go foreclose, so my dad said he was going to help us move some of our stuff out of the house. And when we came back, it turned out that the piano was gone and everything else that was ours that we didn't want to be moved was gone too. So we were kind of shocked. And
really shocked.
Yeah.
As we said, though, you and your mom are a great pair and you've stuck together throughout all of that. And I love the one thing that you do together every day.
We like to have afternoon tea together every day after school.
And, you know, we just come home, I start doing my homework, and then she says, okay, it's ready, and it's really exciting, and we go and we talk and we eat at the same time.
And so is this the time when you and your mom catch up on the day's events?
Yeah, we talk about, I talk about school, and she talks about work, and we have a lot of fun.
So nice to have something like that, a ceremony like that to look forward to.
Yeah.
And a time specifically to connect with mom. Here you are, an amazing girl with an amazing talent and a wonderful mom. What would you say, Victoria, to other 11-year-olds who might be going through really, really hard times like you did?
I would tell them not to give up and just keep going because there's still hope, and just try as hard as they can because, you know, they still have their future ahead of them.
Well, Victoria, your own future looks very, very bright, and I have to say, you and your mom are just such role models of love and hope. But I guess it's not always lovey-dovey between you two. Tell the truth. I mean, you totally disagree when it comes to visual arts. What do you disagree about?
She's always talking about the negative side of the painting, and I'm always talking about the positive side, so we argue a lot. So one time at the, it was De Young Museum in San Francisco, and it was a painting of a cotton field, and someone was picking cotton, and there wasn't much cotton left, it was just like a little bit. So, and the whole field seemed dry, and then there was a road sign that was pointing up. So she said maybe the year there was bad harvest or something, and so the sign was pointing to heaven and they were going to die.
Got pretty dark, Mom. So you tried to disabuse her of that opinion, I guess?
And I said, no, that's just a regular road sign for the cars, and they already picked all the cotton off of the field. And so we were pointing at the picture and everything until the security guard came over and screamed at us for touching the painting.
Of course you weren't touching the painting, and they're getting after you for arguing in a loud voice about your disagreements about art.
Yeah, they made a security guard follow us around the whole museum.
You're a dangerous girl, I realize that. This is absolutely true. By the way, everybody, we've posted an image of that painting we were looking at, Venice by William Merritt Chase, on our website, so you all go have a look at it. Victoria, such an honor to have you, and we wish you all the best. Fantastic performance and great being with you.
Thank you.
Victoria Young, 11-year-old pianist from Henderson, Nevada.
The young performer up next was the winner of the junior division of the 2010 Sphinx competition. The Sphinx organization has worked for 15 years to encourage the participation of African Americans and Latinos in the field of classical music. And this week, there are Get on the Map feature. From the Top is an online map of America where people and organizations who are spreading the power of classical music can share ideas and find out about each other. Are you changing the world through music? Then go to fromthetop.org and get on the map. Over the last 5 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded well over $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Again, go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
That first place laureate of the Sphinx competition is standing next to me now. He's 14-year-old violinist from Bartlett, Tennessee, Randall Gooseby. Randall, you're holding a very, very special violin there. Tell us about it.
The violin I'm playing on now is a Magini violin, and it was made in around 1590, so it's pretty old. And it's currently on loan to me by the Stradivari Society in Chicago, and it's just such a huge difference from the violin that I previously played on.
Mm-hmm. How long have you had this one now?
About a year now.
And what were you playing on before? Where'd you get that one?
It was a $200 violin that was made in China, and I got it off of eBay.
eBay, all right. doesn't it make you nervous to have this precious instrument? I mean, it's probably worth millions, right?
At first I did. I didn't want to break it, so I didn't tune it or anything. But I kind of got used to it because, you know, I was kind of like, you know what, I'm going to play on it, so I might as well, you know, play my heart out. So.
Right. And you say being young helps you relate to the Mozart piece we're about to play together. Mm-hmm. He wrote this fairly early on?
Yes, he was 19 when he wrote it. And being sort of young still, I feel that I can relate to some of the characteristics of the piece. There's some passages that, you know, kind of remind you of just kids running around and playing and just having fun, which I think is very important.
And some of Mozart's scatological sense of humor is pervading the piece, would you say? Good enough. All right, tell everybody what the piece is.
We're going to play the first movement of the Mozart Violin Concerto No. 3.
All right, before we play this, I want to thank all of our great young performers today, and thank you all for coming and listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Randall, let's take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. Musical direction by Tom Vinieri with Caroline Cardios Menos. Our tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette with David Forbes and Claus Nystrom. Broadcast mix by John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Joyce Foundation, working to improve the quality of life in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. From the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. This is NPR.